This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A movie that opens this Friday may well be the first salvo in the post-election culture wars. Kinsey chronicles the life of pioneer sex researcher Alfred Kinsey, whose studies of sexual behavior half a century ago made Americans' most intimate secrets part of the national conversation. In his own time, he was both acclaimed and reviled. Sex research remains controversial today. A warning before we go much further. Today's program will include frank discussions of human sexuality, which may not be suitable for some of our listeners. Professor Kinsey published two monumental reports, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male in 1948 and Sexual Behavior in the Human Female, which appeared 5 years afterwards. Kinsey's goal was to ignore love, romance, emotion, sentiment of any sort, and discover what people actually did. Based on 18,000 in-depth interviews, his books were instant bestsellers and almost as instantly flashpoints for controversy. In a post-Monica Lewinsky Sex in the City era, it can be hard to imagine just how radically the Kinsey reports changed what Americans knew about each other and about themselves. But behind today's Cosmo magazine sex tips and TV shows like Will and Grace lurks an old biologist who got his start studying genetic mutations in gall wasps. Later this hour, we'll talk with NPR's Jackie Northam, who's in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where a military tribunal was stopped yesterday by a federal court decision. But now, if you're familiar with Alfred Kinsey's work, what do you think about its impact on our society? If you can remember when the books first came out, we'd especially be interested to hear from you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us first is Bill Condon, director of the new movie Kinsey. He's with us from the studios of the Museum of Radio and Television in Beverly Hills, California. And it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Yes. Hi, Neil. It's nice to talk to you.
Despite Professor Kinsey's impact, he's hardly a household name these days. What inspired you to make a movie about him?
Oh, you know, I think you always look for an interesting character, and the more I read about him, the more elusive he seems. So it actually seemed worth doing all the research to try to figure him out for myself, at least. You know, he's truly contradictory. He's somebody who asked Americans to be truthful and frank about their sexual behavior and, of course, was completely secretive about his own. He was a scientist who was taking human sexual activity and trying to turn it into data that fit into boxes on a piece of graph paper in order to prove that people can't be categorized and put into boxes. Just massive contradictions there, you know. So, of course, those people always make for interesting central characters in a movie, I think.
You begin your movie when Kinsey is studying not humans but gall wasps and going
right
about it in an absolutely astonishing way.
Yes, it's true. You know, I thought it was a million gall wasps he collected, but actually I've since found out it was 8.3 million of them. And it was actually very funny. On the set, we had about a million boxes. You know, I mean, we had thousands of boxes to suggest all the wasps he's collected, and Liam Neeson had to pin one and make these little markings, and he said, God, he was a strange man. It didn't hit him quite until then, just how meticulous and kind of obsessive he was.
I was going to say obsessive. And interestingly, by gathering this enormous sample, I mean, presumably he was studying gall wasps by getting them all.
That's right.
He sort of went about his research on human sexuality pretty much the same way.
I think that was true. I think he just thought, just gather as much as you can, gather as much data, and you'll find out more about it than anybody has before. He was very excited to apply those techniques to the study of human sexuality.
What made him make that leap from gall wasps to human sexuality?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, it was a product of the times. That there was that incredible VD epidemic in the 30s, and a grassroots movement on campuses started by students to get some proper sex education going. You know, he, because of his own background and what he described as the torment of growing up in this incredibly repressive household, which led to real pain. For example, in his honeymoon, he couldn't consummate his marriage for months. Simply people didn't, and then went to a doctor and found out that it was a physiological problem. People weren't talking about sex. And so after that, he would start to open discussions with graduate students, people who work with, he became somebody that people came to. And I think one of the things was simply doing research, he was astonished to find out how little people knew.
And of course, when he did his studies, it sort of verified that fact. We didn't know anything.
Exactly, that's right. Certainly, we didn't know what other people were doing, and that was obviously the great breakthrough. As you said, everyone knew what we were supposed to be doing, but no one knew what people actually were up to.
And remind us a little bit, as you did your research for this movie, it was a very the pre and post Kinsey world are pretty different.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think one thing that struck me, and it was how radically things have changed, and of course, how in many ways things have remained the same, you know, and I think, you know, especially at a moment like this after the election, we can focus, on how conservative these times seem as a reflection of the early 50s when Kinsey sort of first faced problems with the publication of the female volume. I think we shouldn't underestimate, obviously, how things have changed, too. I mean, he really, whether it's the women's movement, the gay movement, so many things. Just he really opened the discussion, and I think that's frankly why he's so demonized still, because all of the kind of changes wrought by the sexual revolution are laid at his feet. Of course, there were so many other forces that led to that too, but I do think that certain people think if they can somehow destroy his reputation, that all of that will disappear.
We're speaking about the life and legacy of sex researcher Alfred Kinsey. Our guest is Billy Condon, director of the new movie Kinsey, which opens this Friday. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. And let's talk with Bob, who's on the phone with us from Goshen, Indiana.
Yes, I remember the 50s quite well. I remember that the Kinsey report, when it came out, when the one in response in the human female, I was a teenager, and this was the first opportunity that we had to look at sexuality in any kind of a scientific or a medical. Looking at it now, it was considered, you know, it was laughable how medical and certainly wasn't erotic, but for us, back in the 50s, we thought this was purple prose at its highest form.
Yeah, and Bob, did you read a lot of it? Did you actually go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I give Kinsey and Hugh Hefner the credit for shaping my life and whatever.
Bob, one of the arguments that a lot of people make, and I don't think Billy Condon, you would argue with him, that was that in a way Hefner grows directly out of Kinsey's efforts.
Sure.
Oh, Hefner says that himself.
I definitely believe that. And the 50s were so repressed.
Now, I was actually asking that to Billy Condon. Go ahead, Billy.
Right. No. Hefner actually says that. He gives credit to Kinsey for the idea of creating Playboy magazine. And actually, ironically, it was Hefner then started to give money to the Institute that helped them keep going in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, thanks very much for the phone call. And I guess the Kinsey report spared a lot of copies of National Geographic from excessive thumbing.
Absolutely. I appreciate your show.
Appreciate it, Bob.
I'm glad to hear that Bob read it, because it's well known as the most unread bestseller in American history. You know, it was followed by all these popularizations that actually so many people made money off of this report, because Kinsey, of course, used a scientific publisher and didn't do anything to simplify the prose. It was a real scientific volume.
But as you point out in the movie, Kinsey, and as you mentioned earlier, certainly his private sexual life was an aspect of his work, and one that, he always played the clinical researcher, a side of himself that he hid from everybody.
Well, that's true. And I think people have asked, why now? Why T.C. Boyle's written a novel called The Inner Circle about Kinsey? There's a documentary being made on PBS. Why this sudden interest in Kinsey? And I really do think it springs from the fact that it wasn't until 1997 an excerpt from James Jones's massive biography of Kinsey that all of this was revealed about the other side of Kinsey. You know, the fact that he was bisexual, that he was making films in his attic, that he was encouraging these open relationships among his staff. Certainly for me, as a filmmaker, that connection between the public and the private is so crucial to making a film biography. I think often we see movies where, you know, about great writers or artists that we love, and we find out about their health problems and you know, sex lives, but we sort of don't get to see the thing that makes you interested in the first place. But with Kinsey, the work is so intimately connected to who he was, that you can spend time on the work and still be revealing something about the man.
We're going to play a short clip from the movie Kinsey and hear Lori Linney, who plays Kinsey's wife, Mac, confronts her husband about an affair that he's had with a male research assistant. Liam Neeson plays Kinsey.
I don't sleep with other men because I love you and I don't want to hurt you.
But what if it didn't hurt me?
Then I'd be hurt.
You're just afraid that I won't love you anymore, which is impossible, Mac. The human animal is capable of all kinds of sexual expression. Not all sex has to be sanctioned by love, enriched by emotion. To the
Greeks. Stop lecturing, Proc. Stop using science to justify what you've done.
And Kinsey comes off there as a little pompous, a little humorless as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. You know, he's a tough person to have at the center of a movie because he does have all these qualities that could, you know, sort of make an audience lose patience with him. And I think it's really a tribute to Liam Neeson's performance that, as I said, the contradictions are there in every scene. You know, you don't get to see his face as he's saying those lines. But there's, you know, Kinsey is this bully. He is pompous. At the same time, he's extremely sensitive. He's very musical. He's a gardener, you know. And so as Liam is delivering those lines, you also see the pain, the damage that kind of has created this person who is, as you say, so pompous.
But what about his research? Now, was he looking for information that would justify what people in his time certainly would have seen as an outre lifestyle?
Yes. Well, you know, that is the question, and that's what makes me so wary, you know, of making the connection between the private and the public, which was there. I hope that people understand the nuance, though, which is that first and foremost, he was a scientist. He was most excited by the idea of taking, for example, the notion of individual variation, you know, studying 8 million gall wasps, discovering that not any one was identical to the other, applying that to human sexuality. As you said, gathering as many case histories as possible in order to really get data about what people were doing. Science was his passion. It wasn't about, you know, it's very difficult with sex research, I think. You know, people are very suspicious of motivations. And I think it's, you know, important, for me at least, that as I sort of point out the connections between the public and the private, that is in no way meant to undermine the fact that science was of paramount importance to him.
We just have a minute with you left, and I want to ask you if you expect that this film will be controversial.
Well, you know, going in that there are certain people who are waiting on the other side. You know, as I said, there are fringe groups that really do believe that he set us. I shouldn't say that. There are more than fringe groups. There are, you know, conservative groups that believe he set us on the wrong path. You know, I just hope that the most recent conversation after the publication of James Jones's book was hijacked sometimes by some of these fringe people. You know, who just make up charges, and I hope somehow that this time, having gone through that, that we discuss things that are more legitimate, you know, because there is a true, you know, interesting discussion to be had about his effect and whether it was good or bad, you know.
Well, our guests, when we return from the break, will include James Jones, the author of that biography you mentioned, Kinsey, Public Private Life, and we'll also be speaking with the Reverend Peter Spring at the Family Research Council. But Billy Condon, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bill Condon wrote and directed the film Kinsey. It opens this Friday. More after a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the legacy of Dr. Alfred Kinsey and the Kinsey Reports, which detailed the sex lives of American men and women half a century ago. Kinsey came to his work from a background as a biology professor. In a 1956 television interview, he said his interest in studying sex started when he was unable to answer his students' questions about the subject.
I discovered that there was practically nothing known about human sexual behavior in comparison with what we knew about the sexual behavior of other animals and in comparison with what we knew about the activities of other parts of the human body.
We're talking about Kinsey's legacy. Was it a contribution to American society or a detriment? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is the Reverend Peter Sprigg, Director of Marriage and Family Studies at the Family Research Council. He comes to us from their Washington offices, and thanks for joining us here on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you for having me.
Kinsey undertook to study sexuality from a biological perspective. Many have argued this is the wrong way to approach the subject.
Well, I think there may be some legitimacy to studying sexuality biologically, but Kinsey clearly had an ideological agenda in mind as well. I think it's quite clear that his intention from the outset was to remove taboos against all forms of sexual behavior, and his research was skewed in that direction. It was not valid scientific research. It was, in fact, junk science, relying not on random samples of the American population, but on prostitutes, criminals, and other sexual deviants to reach his conclusions.
Sampling modeling was in its early days at those times, and I think there were some mistakes that have been acknowledged. But in other words, you disagree with Bill Condon, who we had on last time, said, well, yes, he may have had an agenda, but saw himself primarily and first and foremost as a scientist.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that not only was he tolerant of and even encouraging of behaviors that most people would consider morally abhorrent, such as child sexual abuse, but even his science wasn't good science. It wasn't done using methodology that would yield any kind of valid results or knowledge.
And as I'm sure you know, there are those who will dispute both of those arguments as unjustified. But how did you see his influence on society?
Well, I think his influence on society has been massive. I mean, Hugh Hefner has admitted that that while Kinsey was the scientist and he was the pamphleteer for the sexual revolution, so the explosion of pornography, I think, is something that we can trace to Kinsey, the explosion of sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, it used to be that there were two that were prevalent. Now there are two dozen. The explosion of unwed pregnancy, the increased acceptance of homosexuality, all of these, I think, can to a large extent be traced back to Kinsey, and all have been negative in their impact on our society.
Well, let's get some more listeners involved in the conversation. Lisa's calling us from Valdosta, Georgia.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Lisa. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. My parents, when I was growing up, I was born in 1959, my parents did know about Kinsey and some of his research. So I was brought up in, I guess you would call it, a more sexually open household. I was made aware of my sexuality because of my parents and the way they were brought up and the strictness and the same things that they were finding with themselves about not being able to talk. My mother married to get out of the home because she didn't know a lot of things that were out there, so she didn't want her children growing up that way. Also, my comment was that it just seems almost like we're taking a step backwards when we find out that the state of Texas has just okayed new textbooks for sexual education that do not include basically any scientific sexual education. It only goes as far as saying abstinence is the only, 100% sure method, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like we're taking a step backwards. We're trying to ignore the fact that we're biological creatures and learn how to deal with that instead of just suppressing it again. That's my comment.
Okay, and I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Do you think that sex education and sex research encourages sex?
No, I don't. I think especially if parents are involved. I have two children, two teenagers myself, and we talk a lot about this. I have a boy and a girl, and I don't feel like it promotes promiscuity. I don't feel like it does that. If they know, if they have important, correct information, and they have a place where they feel safe going to ask for that information instead of just learning from their peers who might not have access to the same information.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Reverend Sprigg, did you want to respond to that?
Well, I'll just make two comments. One, she mentioned the role that of her parents in providing her an education, and we believe that parents play a very important role that has been neglected and even sort of treated with contempt in terms of the parents' role in educating their children, as opposed to having the schools provide them with an education that may be offensive to the moral values that are deeply held by their parents. So we agree that parents should play an important role. And I haven't studied the Texas sex education curriculum in great detail, but I think it does deal with the reality of the biology of sexuality and you know, what sex is about. Really, sex education is quite common. The controversy is over the types of curricula that make the assumption that all young people are going to be sexually active. And that's an assumption that we don't think is proper. Young people need to be taught that abstinence is, in fact, the best way to protect themselves from many negative consequences of early sexual activity.
As you know, last year, 150 funded studies, studies that were funded by the National Institutes of Health came under fire from the Traditional Values Coalition. These were sex research oriented. Do you see value in sex research, if only to correct what you might regard as Mr. Kinsey's flawed methodology?
I think there may be some value in some types of sex research. I certainly, in my own research, have relied upon some of the findings of the National Health and Social Life Survey, which was published in 1994, I believe, which, in, by the way, debunked a lot of the information that had come out from Kinsey's research, such as the myth that 10% of the population is homosexual and so forth. But there may be a room for this, some of this research in the private sector, in the universities and so forth. I don't think it necessarily needs to be funded by the federal government with taxpayer money if the taxpayers object to the content of that research.
Reverend Sprigg, thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Peter Sprigg, Director of Marriage and Family Studies at the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. And joining us now from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco is Kinsey biographer James Jones. The reprint of his book, Alfred C. Kinsey, A Life, comes out this month, and it's good to have you on the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
And let me begin by asking about two of the issues that came up in the last couple of conversations, and that has to do with the quality of Kinsey's research and his methodology and pedophilia.
Kinsey's research was pioneering. He worked at a time in which there was very little of value on very little of value scientifically on human sexual behavior. What he did was to devise a methodology, his interview, that was a remarkable tool for getting people to discuss their private lives. He also confronted the issue of sample, and because he was aware that people would not give him a random sample, there would be too many declinations, he came up with a pretty good compromise, which was to use what statisticians would call a grab sample. If he couldn't get a random sample, he simply grabbed as many people as he could. And he got them to talk in great detail and, I think, with great honesty about things that science knew nothing about.
Were these, as has been characterized, prostitutes, criminals?
They were prostitutes. They were criminals. They were lawyers. They were teachers. They were physicians. They were a wonderful cross-section, really, of Americans and all the varieties that Americans come in. It is true that Kinsey's sample was skewed with regard to the male volume and prison populations. Too many of those histories come from that group. But it's also true that his sample was much broader, much more inclusive, much more Catholic with a lower C than any group or than any scientist before him.
And what about the charges of pedophilia?
The charges of pedophilia, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part of the show. I've just gotten to the studio, so could you bring me up to speed?
This was an allegation that some of the work he did was either with children or glorified those who were pedophiles.
To the best of my knowledge, and I think I pursued this in, as far as the evidence will allow one to pursue it, to the best of my knowledge, there's absolutely no truth in the charge that Kinsey was involved with pedophilia in any shape, form, or fashion. It is true, however, that among the people he interviewed were pedophiles, And Kinsey took their data and put it into his aggregate data, and he used it to discuss human sexual behavior. Beyond that, I, again, don't think that there's any truth to those allegations.
Let's get some more callers in on the conversation. Marjorie is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've recently read a couple of books about Kinsey and found him a fascinating character, but I believe he was demonized because he divorced emotions from sex and gave no emotional value to it. And I also think he muddied his research by becoming an advocate, by putting out there that more sex was better and that having had a variety of sex was better, and that in that way he undermined his status as a scientist. And as far as the pedophilia, what I read, it sounded as if he didn't advocate it, but he also said that children were not hurt by it. They were only hurt by the hysteria of the adults around them reacting to it.
I think some children is what he may have said. James Jones?
Again, Kinsey's position on pedophilia, I think, is not his better moment or stronger suit. Our society has, I think, correctly drawn very firm lines against adult-child contacts. And Kinsey, I think, in his eagerness to embrace Eros and the free expression of sexual feelings, was frankly soft on that. I think he was non-judgmental. Were he here to answer this question himself, I think what he would say is that my job wasn't to judge. My job was to collect data. And the moment I started censoring people for this form of behavior or for that form of behavior would be the exact moment in which my sources would dry up. Having said that, I think there's a level of discomfort that we bring to this issue that that is warranted.
What about Marjorie's initial point that he was demonized because he took morality, romance, emotion out of sex?
Kinsey was foremost a scientist, a taxonomist. He knew how to count. He knew how to quantify, but he knew how to count and quantify those things which could be counted and quantified. There was no easy tool, no ready way that he was able to devise, nor has there been, I think, since then, to get a handle on how people feel about sex. What he wanted to do was to quantify sexual acts and begin to give us some indication of what people actually did, with the implication that what they did would tell you something about how they felt.
Marjorie, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We're speaking with biographer James H. Jones about Kinsey. He wrote about him in print. A new movie about his life opens on Friday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Tracy in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a thought, wondering if the information that Kinsey brought out actually underlined women's sexuality, therefore giving them more power, which sort of was like a precursor to the feminist movement.
Accurate, James Jones?
Well, there's no question that Kinsey's exposures, his findings on female sexuality went a long way to debunk long-standing myths that really came out of Victorian sensibilities that women were, somewhat asexual. The world that he confronted was the world that was associated with what was reported to have been the advice to Queen Victoria before her wedding, which was to lie still and think of the flag. What Kinsey did was to, again, interview women to find that they were wonderfully sexually endowed with feelings and desires and drives, and that given the right opportunities and stepping out of the shadows of Victorian repression, that they were full-blown sexual creatures.
Tracy, if that contributed to the feminist movement, then I guess you're right.
I think it did.
Okay, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Mary Beth. Mary Beth is in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi. Well, you asked the people who remembered when the books first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I were married in 1953, and I think it hadn't been out wasn't very long after that, was it, that the report came out?
One before, one afterwards.
Okay. Well, it was the one for men was the one that we knew about. However, we didn't read it. But we heard there was a lot of publicity about the books. What I remember mostly is that all of my friends thought that anybody who responded to those questionnaires was pretty nutsy. another thing, the only other thing from the book that I remember is that they said a lot of people like to have sex with the lights on. And that's my memory.
Well, Mary Beth, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
People, I guess, have anecdotal memories of what happened when those books came out. The impact, though, was hard to underplay. James Jones, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Kinsey the Man. Through your research, we're all going to shortly see him as Liam Neeson, and we will see him as Liam Neeson forever. But before we get that picture in our minds, what's the picture that you have in your mind? A kindly old professor, a driven and obsessed tyrant, a dirty old man, some combination?
Well, I think maybe a little all of the above. What impresses me about Kinsey is that he is really a force of nature. If you had to design a person to do the research, the very, very difficult, challenging research that he accomplished, that individual, I think, would look exactly like Alfred Charles Kinsey. The man would cut through case-hardened steel to get to where he wanted to go. There'd be a silhouette of him. He'd simply step through the steel. He was capable of enormous focus. He was capable of devising the methodologies, the soul of science to get him to where he wanted to go. And he was capable of selling that research in a pretty hostile environment. So when I think of him, I think of him really as an engine of productivity, as a guy who moves mountains and accomplishes. He's like one of those really protein, you know, Victorians who step out of the century and sort of, you know, conquer Africa or do whatever. He is, he's by any standards, a remarkable figure.
Maybe if he'd just stuck with gall wasps, I don't know.
Well, if he'd stuck with gall wasps, we wouldn't be discussing him.
James Jones, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
James Jones is the author of Kinsey. His new biography, his biography is just being reissued. And we're also talking about the movie that opens this Friday in places around the country. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking about the current state of sexual research, from the topics of concern to the areas of controversy. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Back after a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In just a couple of minutes, we'll talk about how a new court ruling affects prisoners detained at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. But now let's finish up our conversation on Alfred Kinsey and his life and legacy with a look at the current state of sexuality research. Joining us now is Stephanie Sanders, Associate Director of the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction at Indiana University. She joins us from the studios of member station WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, and it's good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
The core of Kinsey's research was to quantify behavior. What are the main focuses in sex research today?
Well, I think that we're building on the description of behaviors, although there are still plenty of studies that examine what people are doing in various cultures and subcultures sexually. We have a lot of questions about the whys people do various things sexually. There's research at the sociocultural level, looking at how do behaviors vary across continents and across historical times. So there's historical research. There's research on couples and family dynamics, and there's research at the individual level. What do individuals do and why? And then we have research at the microscopic physiological level. Why do you know, what's going on with the biology underneath sexuality?
And is it as controversial, sex research, as it was in Kinsey's time?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. I think that sexuality topics pervade our popular culture, So in some ways, people are more open about their curiosity about sexuality. However, there's quite a bit of controversy about research and questions even about funding sex research.
Mm-hmm. And we were speaking earlier with a representative from the Family Research Council, and he was saying, look, he didn't think that the federal government ought to be involved in funding sex research. And as you know, there was some controversial a list published last year. Some called it a hit list of those doing sexual research. Is this becoming over-politicized?
In some ways, it may be. One of the problems with saying that the federal government should not support sex research is that it isolates an area of research really important to human health and well-being and says we shouldn't put money there. Then that raises the question of where will money for research come from? Some of that may come from industry, and that's fine because it provides an avenue of investigation for things related to, let's say, pharmaceutical development. But what about other things that affect human sexuality, issues about relationships, issues about socioeconomic status, things related to sexually transmitted diseases, things related to unwanted pregnancies, things related to marital discord? I think there is an important reason for the federal government to be interested in having those things studied in impartial ways.
Mm-hmm. There is, as you know, a great deal of difficulty associating with studying sexual behavior among adolescents. Is that something you think should be done?
Well, yes, we need to do that because, in fact, so many of our young people are engaged in sexual behavior and they bear the consequences of that behavior. And that has impact not only on them and their families and their peers, but on society as a whole.
Here's an email question, which I guess has to do with a little bit of history. Did the work of Masters and Johnson in the 1970s add to the work of Kinsey, or was it just more of the same?
No, it was quite a bit of an addition. Kinsey's work was beginning to show the need to do more careful physiological studies related to sexuality, particularly when there were questions about orgasm and arousal and gender differences in those. And Masters and Johnson took that up and did thorough investigations of that. And that helped provide a lot of what we know physiologically today, although lots of other researchers have contributed to that field.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a listener on the line. Shauna is with us from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I'm a PhD student at the University of Chicago, where sex research is alive and well, and I'm doing some cross-cultural research on gender and sexual behavior. And I just wanted to make sure that the listeners to this show don't come away with the impression that the only critiques of Kinsey come from sort of morally and politically conservative people with a clear agenda against more progressive sex research. My understanding of the contemporary literature on sexual research is that it's quite obvious that Kinsey's methods might not stand up to the random sampling techniques and such now considered de rigueur, but that it's possible to disagree with his methods without disagreeing with his aims in exploring sexual activity from a more academic perspective.
So from the academic perspective, Shauna, what you're saying is, again, questions about his methodology, which we discussed earlier with James Jones?
Yes.
Yes. Would you agree with that, Stephanie Sanders?
Yes, I would. I appreciate that caller's point of view, because we wouldn't take very many areas of science and expect that researchers 60 years earlier were using the same methods as we do today. And yet, many of the things that Kinsey did are really quite good examples and still being used today. Kinsey knew that he had to assure confidentiality of those records if he wanted people to talk to them. Kinsey's methods for interviewing were very detailed, very non-judgmental to provide that atmosphere. And although Kinsey didn't get to publish work himself, he also understood, as he was taking these histories, the growing need to understand cultural context in which these behaviors occurred. And so he began to collect materials related to sexuality, depictions of sexuality across cultures, across history, in art, in literature. And we have those things at the Institute, and they serve as data and resources for scholars in many disciplines. Hmm.
Shauna, let me ask you, do you plan to go into this field?
Well, I've just completed dissertation research in Japan, doing some cross-cultural research, and hopefully, yes, I will be able to find a job in this field.
Okay, thanks for the phone call, Shauna, and good luck with the dissertation.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And let me ask you, Stephanie Sanders, is this a big field? Is this a burgeoning field? Is this there are a lot of intellectual excitement in this field?
Well, there is, and yet there's some concern about political opposition to the field. However, since Kinsey's days, a lot more researchers in various disciplines have sexuality as part of their research topic. We can think of people in medical schools, historians, sociologists, anthropologists, people studying art and literature. So sexuality is really an area that can be studied from many different traditional academic disciplines, and the best way to understand sexuality is to bring all those perspectives to bear on our understanding of how humans behave sexually.
Let's bring one more caller in on the conversation. Ruth is with us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Yes, I saw a great cartoon back in the 50s when all of this was, you know, in the works. And the little girl had come to the door to let her father in, coming home from work. And she said, "Oh, Mom, a man named Kinsey came to talk to Mom." And she stayed all afternoon.
Well, Ruth, thank you for that. Did you laugh as hard then?
Yes.
I appreciate the phone call. And Stephanie Sanders, I suspect that's just one of many cartoons that you folks may have up on your walls.
Oh, yes. There was a lot of reaction in various types of media and many cartoons. And even it hit some of the sitcoms of the day. I believe there was one on with I Love Lucy.
With James Jones, a biography being reissued and the movie coming out this week, do you applaud or do you wince waiting for reaction?
I think overall, I think it's very good that people are looking at Kinsey's life and work. It makes people aware of what sex research can contribute. I think it makes them also aware that sex research is going on today and how it can help people's lives. Of course, there are elements of the film that we have to remember. This is not a documentary. It's a narrative. It's a perspective on Kinsey's life. And so there will be elements that make some people uncomfortable, for sure.
Stephanie Sanders, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Stephanie Sanders is Associate Director of the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction at Indiana University in Bloomington, and she joined us from the studios of member station WFIU on campus.